I'm Lina Khmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On today's program, we'll take a look at Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's is an irreversible progressive brain disorder that slowly leads to memory loss, destroys thinking skills, and prevents people from carrying out simple tasks. It often affects people age 65 and older, but early onsets of the disease can start as young as 30. According to the World Health Organization, Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia, a group of symptoms affecting memory, thinking, behavior, and the ability to perform daily activities. About 50 million people have dementia worldwide. For more on Alzheimer's disease, I spoke with Dr. Mahmoud Mahina, neuroscientist, educator, and researcher at the University of Sussex, United Kingdom. Take a listen.
Dr. Mahmoud Bukhara Mahina, thank you so much for joining us. You are a research fellow and an expert in the field of neuroscience. Today we want to discuss Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a disease that affects many people, especially the elderly. What is Alzheimer's? How can we understand it?
Alzheimer's disease is a brain disease that affects brain cells, and it is irreversible. What that means is that once it actually recovered, unlike in other systems where damage could be recovered. And one of the major things that Alzheimer's disease causes is the loss of memory. This is one of the early signs that comes with the disease. Thinking, and at the same time, changes in behavior, irritability, confusion, and eventually, people lose the ability to be able to do the normal things that they are able to do. One of the interesting things about this condition, unlike many other diseases, in this condition, you kind of lose yourself and your livelihood. You cease to exist even though you are alive, because eventually you lose sense of who you are and your family and people around you. So it's quite devastating.
Now, what causes Alzheimer's disease to develop in one person versus the other?
Yeah, so this is an excellent question. And the truth is, so there are different forms of Alzheimer's disease. We do have frequent in people younger, for example, in their mid-60s. And in this form of the condition, there are certain kind of genetics that do contribute to the condition. So, for example, there's a protein called ATP, which is amyloid precursor protein. Mutations on that particular gene has been shown to cause this early onset form of the disease. However, the most prevalent of this condition is the late onset form of the disease, which happens in elderly people, usually people above the age of 65, and as a person, you know, ages more, the risk increases. And for that, it's actually a combination of different things. So it could be lifestyle, obviously age. Also, gender seems to play a role, as well as some other vascular factors, such as weight, obesity, diabetes, and even in that case, also genetics does play a role as well.
So how much of a problem is it in Africa?
Maybe we should look at it from two directions. At the moment, we don't know exactly how much Alzheimer's disease data. Unlike in other places like America, Europe, UK, etc., where the data is available from local health facilities to the all other facilities, and this data is collected from which an estimate is produced. In Africa, we really don't have that estimate. So most of the studies at the moment say that in 2015 we had about 4 million cases of Alzheimer's in Africa, and this is supposed to rise to about 7 million, you know, by 2030, and by 2050 we are probably going to see about 15 million, you know. These are all estimates. So that is the problem. And then coming back to the issue of whether people are aware of it. No, most people are not aware of this. And this is partly because we do have a lot of misconceptions about brain diseases. Oftentimes, people see brain disease as a problem that has to do with maybe, you know, someone has been possessed by the genie, or someone who has been, bewitched by some other person, you know. So because of that, we really kind of confuse real cases of those conditions and real biological problems that affect the brain. So people are not aware. And this is why over the last probably 6-7 years, myself and a lot of other people have been organizing outreach activities to raise awareness around brain diseases.
So what is the message to people regarding brain diseases? And when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, what are some of the telltale signs?
My main message to people is that brain disease is not necessarily something that happens when someone has been bewitched. This is something that does happen normally. So just like someone would have diabetes, HIV, malaria, similar thing would happen with the brain. Just because it affects the mental mind, you know, the mental state, it doesn't mean that people should be scared of those individuals. In fact, people should try to kind of afford them support. And in fact, the government should have good policies to look after those people, to encourage them to come from poor communities or from rural communities for diagnosis and other things like that. But in terms of the science and other things, there are many different things. One of the major things is the gradual loss of memory. And obviously, there is irritability, confusion, poor or decreased judgment, you know, problems with thinking, language, so many different things now happen gradually. So the key message, therefore, is that when someone is aged and they start seeing the person having memory problems, they should not just say, this is aging. They should try to observe that individual and, if necessary, go to a healthcare center so that the person would be seen by a proper health personnel.
What about treatment and care? What is available?
At the moment, there's no real treatment to stop the disease from progressing or to cure it. Most of the treatments do kind of help in alleviating some of the symptoms. So, for example, there are some treatments that are targeting people that have the early onset form of disease, and that a drug particularly called rivastigmine or donepezil is given to people that helps with alleviating the memory problems. And apart from that, there are other drugs that are given to people with the moderate form of the disease, and also that is targeting the symptom. And even the recent drug that you mentioned, it's not fully certified to kind of have pure effective effect on the disease. This is why it has to go into post-approval to fully understand its efficacy. So this is why it is important for researchers around the world to continue working to really figure out what is going on. But in Africa, we do have a major challenge. And our major challenge is that even these drugs that are produced from in America, or those that have been approved in America and everything, access to those drugs is a big issue, you know, due to the financial situation. And apart from that, also because people don't really go to the healthcare, they will not even be aware of those things. So oftentimes people, manage people with those conditions using traditional medicine, and sometimes by isolating them, which is really, really not good. So we need more researchers in Africa working on this issue. And just to quickly mention something again in this particular subject, we don't really even know much about how this condition starts or progresses in Africans. And even the risk factors can be a bit different between Africans and other people. So we shouldn't always think that the research on, say, Alzheimer's disease conducted outside Africa is going to be 100% the same with conditions within Africa. And this is why the government and researchers within the continent need to do more as well in this area.
So, Dr. Maina, when you look at the issue of Alzheimer's today on the continent, where do you think going forward the priorities will be? I know you talked about the importance of research, but in the African context, do you see that awareness is even more critical before even talking about treatment, or is it just a combined approach where every aspect of this disease is equally important?
I like this combined approach, and the reason is because awareness is definitely very important to help people to go and get checked if they have problems. But also, I think research into treatments and other things is also important, simply because the cost of therapy is important in anything that you consider. If, for example, in other countries, it's going to be affordable, we have to think about in African context, would it be affordable? And therefore, research into these things within Africa using our own resources might help in unlocking some treatments that might be affordable. And one of these treatments, for example, for years or for centuries, Africans are known to use traditional medicine, you know, for treatment of diseases. And there are researchers working on that to see whether they are effective against our brain diseases like Alzheimer's. And I think those kind of researches should be encouraged, simply because it may help in kind of unlocking some therapy which can be affordable to the people, if you see what I mean. So I like combined approach. And another thing that I should mention is that we should also kind of upgrade our healthcare system, specifically in terms of the diagnostic things related to these conditions. At the moment, there are fewer neurologists in Africa. I mean, some countries don't have even up to 20 or 30 neurologists. Even Nigeria, I think, based on estimates from a few years ago, there are probably about 80 to 100. So it is the neurologists that would even be able to make proper diagnosis of this condition. But even the neurologists are challenged by the lack of the facility. At the moment, most of them use kind of questionnaires and other things like that to make diagnosis. But in reality, to make diagnosis of such conditions, you need more than that.
Before we wrap, what else would you like to add?
So the only thing that I would like to add, not necessarily on my research, is that at the moment, you see, the life expectancy in most African countries is between probably 53 to 55 to 56. And it is expected that our life expectancy is going to increase. And as it increases, definitely the conditions like these will increase. And it is therefore absolutely important for our government to now start thinking about policies for management, diagnosis, for all these different things. Because European countries and other countries, America, etc., have already invested a lot in this area. And it is expected that in the future, their cases will go down. It is us, our cases, that will go up. So if we don't really have that, package of management, research, etc., we might end up in a big problem by that time.
Okay, Dr. Mahmoud Bukarmina, thank you so much for enlightening us on the issue of Alzheimer's disease. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Lina.
That was Dr. Mahmoud Maina, neuroscientist, educator, and researcher at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including COVID-19, climate change, and food security, top the agenda as foreign ministers from the G20 group of nations met in Italy in person for the first time since 2019. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Treatment for Alzheimer's temporarily improves symptoms of memory loss, but there is no cure. The first new drug against Alzheimer's disease in nearly two decades received a conditional and controversial green light from U.S. drug regulators. Justine Mullen-Kazadian has more.
This is aducanumab, called Aduhelm, the new Alzheimer's disease treatment by Biogen. The biotech company says the antibody drug reduces the toxic amyloid plaques deposited in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted accelerated approval of the drug under some conditions.
What's important about this is that there was, of course, some controversy and very complicated sets of data that many people had different opinions about. But importantly, the FDA actually approved this under accelerated approval. Accelerated approval is unique. It is only reserved for those diseases or conditions that have seriously unmet medical needs. And so Alzheimer's is definitely one of those. We do not today have a way to slow, stop, or even prevent Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementias and affects over 50 million people worldwide, according to the WHO. The abnormal proteins amyloid build up in the brain and lead eventually to brain cell loss and chemical changes, resulting in Alzheimer's symptoms such as memory loss. Biogen's Aduhelm targets amyloid by creating an immune response, but the drug's approval has drawn sharp criticism. An independent expert panel convened by the FDA say there is not sufficient evidence of Aduhelm's benefit and has recommended against approval.
The question is, does that have a clinically meaningful effect? One study that the sponsor did was positive and one study was negative. And I think the FDA felt that the data from the positive study were sufficiently encouraging to approve it on an accelerated basis such that the drug will be out and available to be used, but the sponsor must do another study to show clinical efficacy to keep the drug on the market.
Another challenge with the new drug is its cost, about $56,000 a year per patient.
In terms of the price, we think it reflects the value of the drug for patients. We applied our pricing principles with respect to value, sustainability, and continued investment in R&D for terrible diseases.
The last Alzheimer's drug was approved in 2003. The FDA says it will continue to monitor Aduhelm and is requiring Biogen to conduct a post-approval clinical trial to verify the drug's clinical benefit. Justine Mullen-Kanzadian for VOA News in Washington, D.C.
Turning now to the coronavirus pandemic, the UN Children's Fund says COVID-19 is having devastating consequences on millions of children in sub-Saharan Africa, many of whom become orphaned, making them vulnerable to many social ills. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund says COVID-19 is having devastating consequences on millions of children in sub-Saharan Africa, many of whom become orphaned, making them vulnerable to many social ills. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. Text in 321. Sub-Saharan Africa is in the throes of a full-blown third wave of COVID-19. Children are usually not directly affected by the deadly disease, but they are losing their parents to the pandemic. Traditionally, when children become orphaned, the burden of looking after them falls on the grandparents. However, a spokesman for the UN Children's Fund, James Elder, says older people are among the main victims of COVID-19. Consequently, he says children are shoveled off to another relative who likely is living in dire, impoverished circumstances. The added strain and stress, he says, puts children at risk of abuse and child labor.
Seen the reporting of children reporting on helplines, violence against them, and the need for support. Those things come again when children have lost a support mechanism that they previously had, which often comes from being orphaned or an economic situation where a parent has simply had to leave to go elsewhere because the economic opportunities have dried up due to the pandemic.
Children who do not go to school are unprotected and open to exploitation. Elder says COVID-19 has dealt a devastating blow to education. For example, he notes an estimated 9 million children in Eastern and Southern Africa have not returned to school since they started reopening. He says many children are not getting enough to eat because of growing poverty due to pandemic-related lockdowns. He adds poor nutrition leads to worsening health.
We know that routine immunization rates and things like malaria access have been slashed, as I say, some by up to 20%. That we know that pregnant women have a great deal more difficulty getting to antenatal services. We know pregnant women have died because of that, because of things like lockdown and because healthcare systems are absolutely stretched. Yes, there have been unnecessary deaths of children.
UNICEF says governments must prioritize keeping schools open and safe and is urging them to keep children in school while supplying water and sanitation to schools across the continent. The UN Children's Agency says it is increasing cash transfers to the most vulnerable and providing psychological support for children and their families. It says it also is working to prevent family separation and to strengthen family and community-based care during this challenging time. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists in charge of South Africa's response to COVID-19 say the intense third wave of the virus is being driven mostly by the Delta variant, first identified in India. This particular mutation, they say, results in more people being hospitalized. But South Africa's health facilities are already full of patients struggling to survive coronavirus. It's the nation on the continent worst hit by COVID-19, with almost 2 million infections and nearly 60,000 deaths. Darren Taylor has more.
With only a small percentage of people vaccinated, there's a tangible sense of panic in South Africa's health sector.
People who need oxygen and who need admission and ventilation for COVID are being managed at home because there aren't even beds. And that's also in private practice. It's not only in the public setting.
Professor Dania Ballett is clinical head of four of the country's biggest public hospitals, all in Johannesburg. She told VOA that health caregivers are not coming close to coping because of a huge influx of patients. She says their suffering is worsened by regular power and water cuts.
A person who needs admission for COVID sit for 3 days at Helen Joseph on a chair in casualty in oxygen with no water to be able to wash in and waiting for a hospital bed, and there was no ventilator bed if they needed it.
Professor Tulio da Oliveira is a scientist who sequences viruses. He says several variants are circulating in South Africa, especially Delta, which continues to cause many thousands of deaths around the world. In a Zoom briefing to journalists this weekend, D'Oliveira said Delta's now in about 85 countries and is responsible for 95% of infections in the United Kingdom, for example.
In Africa, it seems to be very widespread also, with many sites in Southern Africa, East Africa, Central Africa, and West Africa. So not only these variants seem to be spreading very fast, but it's very quick to start dominating potentially the global pandemic.
D'Oliveira describes the Delta mutation as by far the most concerning so far.
It is really, really highly transmissible, more than all other variants, including the one in South Africa, Beta. It is calculated that's potentially double more transmissible than the original virus, yeah?
He says there's no evidence yet that Delta's deadlier than other variants, but it causes more fatalities simply because it infects more people. D'Oliveira says Delta also results in more people being reinfected with COVID-19. Infectious diseases specialist Dr. Richard Lessels says there's evidence to suggest that Delta causes different symptoms than other variants.
Certainly in the UK at the moment, the most prominent symptoms are headache, sore throat, runny nose, and sneezing. And what's less prominent are some of the symptoms that we previously highlighted, like loss of taste, loss of smell, fever. These are the kind of symptoms that we should still be looking out for on top of all the normal symptoms of fever, cough, shortness of breath.
But with the rise of Delta in South Africa and elsewhere, says Lessels, there's some good news. The two vaccines being used in the UK, where the variant is particularly prevalent, namely AstraZeneca and Pfizer, are very effective against Delta.
There are very high levels of protection, above 90% protection against hospitalization once you've had the two doses. And even with the first dose, there are very high levels of protection with this Delta variant.
However, South Africa isn't using AstraZeneca since it doesn't work well enough against the Beta variant first found in the country late last year. Pfizer is part of its vaccination program, but stocks extremely limited at the moment. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Still in South Africa, schools are closing again. The bans on booze and indoor restaurant meals are back, and the curfew is tighter. President Cyril Ramaphosa is raising the country's lockdown level after scientists discovered that Delta, the most transmissible variant of COVID-19, is wreaking havoc on the population and overwhelming hospitals. An expert fears the third wave of the coronavirus may be the worst. Tuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
For the next 2 weeks, no alcohol will be sold in South Africa. All citizens are expected to be home between 9 p.m. and 4 a.m. Public gatherings are banned. Schools and tertiary institutions are expected to close by Friday. All leisure travel in and out of the country's most affected province, Gauteng, has been banned. Level 4 is just one notch below level 5, which is the final level and the total shutdown. Ramaphosa says this is the best way to protect citizens.
We are concerned about the rapid spread of this variant. It is much more contagious. The measures we have so far adopted to contain the spread of the virus may no longer be sufficient to reduce transmission.
The average number of daily infections has doubled, as have hospital admissions. Deaths from COVID-19 have increased by nearly 50%. The ban on on-site services of restaurants, which were already struggling from earlier restrictions, has sparked anger. Wendy Alberts is the CEO of the Restaurant Association of South Africa.
14 days in our industry is decimation. We are constantly, critically, always put on hold, and we're always the people that are having to take responsibility for the rapid spread of COVID, yet we're still waiting for the scientific evidence and the data to be presented to us to show how and how we are responsible.
Lucky Ndimane, president of the National Liquor Traders Council, is also bitter over the blanket ban on alcohol sales.
Almost 250,000 people are not going to go to work tomorrow. The president is going to go to work with his cabinet. That has no clue what is happening on the ground because they live in high chairs. We now have to wake up with a future cut, with poverty as certainty for our people. It is really not fair. We cannot be subjected to this.
However, Elsabe Conradi, CEO at the Emalahleni Private Hospital, says the situation in hospitals is now dire.
Our COVID beds are completely filled up. So even the other hospitals, we try to help one another. You know, when someone has a bed available, we try to accommodate those patients. And the problem is that it's not the mild cases, but it's also a lack of ventilators, ICU beds, high care beds, as well as oxygen.
Nearly 2 million people have tested positive for the coronavirus in South Africa since March last year. Close to 60,000 people have died. The country is struggling to vaccinate its 60 million citizens, with just above 2.6 million people having received their first jab so far. Tuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOAHealthChat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lina Khumudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.